The year is 65 million BC. The Flood flows from the Crucible, investing life in all beings with a maculum. All is peace until the Sanguinary appears out of the Crucible and shatters into shards of conundrum. Through this act, the Absalim attain immortality, and the Sunedrion begin spreading seedlings throughout the Dominions. Mortal life is not without conflict, though, as the Absalim confront the Primordials after engendering the Anopheles. Then the Anopheles ride against the forces of the Sanguinary to destroy the Malice Shard, thus causing the shattering and separating the habitat from the Dominions. For over 50 millennia, the Immortals fight the Shouting War, must escape the Lash by seeking refuge in the habitat. Flash forward to now. You are an Ingenue who has begun to awaken from Lethe to realize they are not a Twilight. Your Himsati yearns to be unleashed. The Femme Darkle has been stolen. The Invisible War has begun. Welcome to the world of Immortals.
John, I'm pretty sure it's offensive to call people Injuns. I think you have to start the game as a Native American, not an Injun.
Nah, man, you're an Ingenue.
Oh, you're an Ingenue.
Ooh, you're an Ingenue.
Ingenue. Okay, I feel like that's still offensive, but now it's like fetishizing. You're an Ingenue. Ooh, I bet you make fancy blankets.
Oh, that's real bad.
Well, it could have been worse. I could have been like, you're an Injun, ooh, and you're not even wearing a jean jacket. All right, that's enough offense to the
Yay,
Native Americans.
Yay, all of our Native American listeners who didn't hate us before.
Sorry, Tom.
We're so sorry.
I assume your name is Tom.
It's assumed.
All right, so this week, I'm Jeff, and most weeks I am Jeff.
This week, I'm Bill. All right. Screw it, I don't care.
You're Bill this week. So I'm Jeff, and here's Bill. Say hi to the nice people, Bill.
Hi-yo!
And as always, we are the System Mastery Podcast, and this week we are covering Immortal, The Invisible War.
The Invisible War.
And next week, we are covering Immortal,
The Visible War.
I guess the idea behind this is that this is such a dense, crazy book.
This is the first book since our last two-parter with Cinnabar. We're reading it, I'm like, this is just wall-to-wall crazy. Like, there isn't any period reading this book where I'm not like, I don't understand what's going on here. Like, what?
All right, so this is, once again, called Immortal the Invisible War, and it's a book about playing as godlings, and it's from around 1994, and it has that feel to it. There's a lot of stuff about how the dreamscape of the world is, like, a computer, so if you want to do cyber combat, then you merely enter your own sleep. That's the whole thing that, in our first attempt to record this episode, we didn't even get to. So, strap in, because there's all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah, just get on board, because we are going to take you deep.
Oh yeah, get on board, because it's a new century.
They are going to sell Immortal at the corner store, they're going to sell Immortal at the five and dime.
I don't think you could get five or a dime for this. It's a terrible book.
Ugh.
All right, so to give you the basic concept of what you're playing, just so we can start extrapolating the individual bits and pieces, in Immortal, you play as an immortal, someone who lives forever, someone who has probably been alive, whether or not they know it, for millions and millions of years. And you have a stat spread that's divided into six stats that's called your halo, and it's an actual halo. It's energy that radiates out from you, and other immortals can sense when it's around. You also have some extra halo energy floating around called your free immaculum.
Man, we are getting way too deep already into this.
I know.
Like, we haven't even explained anything, and you're already getting into free immaculum.
No, it's okay, because all I'm doing is describing the character sheet, and then we're going to break down and drill through each one of those little bits. Under that are your attentions, which are basically skills, except some of them are also the spells you can cast, and some of them are things you're just immune to.
Well, like, the attentions are mostly anti-hostiles, but again, we're getting too crazy into this.
Oh, you don't want to know too much about hostiles.
Let me give you the overview of what you as the player care about.
Okay, sure.
Like,
fire away.
Here's the general gist of, if someone was like, oh, we're going to play Immortal, what am I playing? It is, you're a guy who forgot he was an immortal and are just remembering now that you used to be super crazy powerful because you went through a process to make you forget it. And so it's one of those, like the standard young adult novel where they're like, oh, you're the chosen one. You've been a super powerful wizard all along.
You're so special, Billy, even though your parents got a divorce.
I know that you felt different from the other kids all along, but it's not because you're a creepy weirdo that doesn't bathe. It's because you're an immortal being.
And 5 years from now, when you have a boring bank job, you're not going to look back on reading this with total shame.
So yeah, it's one of those little like wish fulfillment things, because you're even supposed to start play, like they suggest, you should just be you.
Oh yeah,
and you remember that you are an immortal.
This is a game where you're supposed to play as yourself. I assume you do that the first time you play it.
Well yeah, because when it talks about like, oh, what do you play? You should probably be yourself, but you can look like anything you want, because as you start to remember your past lives, maybe you take on a true form.
Yeah.
So even if you're like, oh yeah, I want to play as me, but I want to play as me that isn't a dumpy beardo. Okay, well that's fine.
Okay, instead you're a hot dude.
Yeah.
Oh man, you are so hot. And the only
I'm like me, but I'm actually Sephiroth.
Yeah. You're like you, but you're Sephiroth. And the only reason the ladies won't date you is because you're too nice.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Right there in Immortal. It's like, reasons people won't date me. My Himsadi form is a spider, 2%. My immaculum isn't free enough, 3%, and I'm too nice, 95%.
Oh, nice guys are the worst.
So yeah, that's your general premise. Now, that doesn't sound crazy. That sounds sort of like the same thing of like, oh, if you've read the old werewolf book, it's like, oh, you figure out you were actually born with the ability to be a werewolf. Okay, that's sort of a standard thing you get.
Also, games where you play as yourself aren't especially common anymore, but they aren't unknown. There's at least one other called Time Ship I'm aware of, where you're supposed to start and play as yourself.
Yeah, it's...
So, it's not outside the realm of regular gaming.
No, it's definitely a conceit where you're like, oh, because you are a weird immortal that has multiple forms and has lived for millions of years, the idea that, oh, well, right now I'm just some guy, but I'll remember how badass I am. And then once you play enough, your character's not going to be you anymore. Because you're like, oh, well, I turn into a giant mutant lizard that can also, like, sing songs that cause someone's head to explode. So, not really me anymore.
No, but close enough. Enough that Stacy will finally notice you, and all the guys at Pep Boys will stop rattling your chops.
Rattling my chops.
Yeah.
Every time I come to work with some leftover pork chops, and I'm like, hey, you guys, leave that alone. And they're like, rattle, rattle, rattle. Oh, looks like you got some loose pork chops in that Tupperware. Rattle, rattle, rattle.
When I have a headache, I mix my metaphors. That's how it works.
Yeah. I liked my metaphors like I liked my drinks mixed.
I like my metaphors like I like my drinks with way too much vodka in them. Which is why I always say that a penny saved is some vodka.
It's true. You always say that.
I do. I say that constantly. I say a horse divided event against itself needs some vodka.
Yeah. No, I remember seeing that on Facebook. There was a field of flowers that, yeah. And then it was attributed to Abraham Lincoln.
That's correct. Yeah. And I had another one that said, when you only saw one set of footprints, that's because I was drinking vodka.
Whereas that one's just true to life.
That's totally what
we were walking along the beach, and then I noticed there was only one set of footprints, and it's because Jesus was totally wasted.
Well, you know, if you can turn water into it.
Yeah. Go for it, man.
All right, so basically, to create your character in this game, the way that the game describes how you should create your character is the person who's in charge, and I forget what they call him in this. It's like the director, I think, because you're supposed to be players in the cast.
The narrator.
Is the narrator? Okay. Yeah, so they're supposed to say things like, well, how strong do you think you are?
Oh, yeah, it's got a process where you don't even need to put down dots to start with.
Yeah.
It's just, oh, well, you'd like to pick something up? How strong do you think your character is? And then, like, he makes it on the fly?
Yeah, which is weird because there's very clear delineations of how many points you're allowed to spend as a starting character, so I guess there's rules in place to stop, you know, it's going to come down to the first thing you describe yourself as. Like, well, I try to see into the distance. Well, how perceptive do you perceive yourself to be? well, I'm extraordinarily perceptive. I'm the most fucking perceptive. You think you're more perceptive than me? Fuck you. Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, well, I'll put down the highest marks on that. Now, how strong are you? Oh, I'm very strong. I'm super strong. Well, you can't keep being super everything.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem, is the stat spread that they give you point-wise means you can be basically average in everything, maybe slightly above average or real good in one thing.
All the stats range from 1 to 15 dots, and you get enough points at the beginning. Oh, and a starting human has 2 dots, and a starting immortal, which you don't get to be because you're actually a starting human who remembers he's an immortal, all of them are basic 5 dots. So those are your floors. An immortal's floor is 5 dots, an immortal or a mortal human's floor is 2 dots. You get enough points for 2 dots in all of your abilities, except I think it's enough for 3 of those abilities to have 3 dots instead.
Well, it's you have 6 abilities and 15 points.
So yeah, so you can have 3 threes and 3 twos.
Yeah.
Or any combination therein. So you're kind of a schmo at the beginning of this game.
Oh yeah, there's maybe something that you're slightly better than the average person at doing. Maybe you're a little stronger or a little faster, whatever. But for the most part, you are going to start this game as just kind of a schmo.
Although don't worry about it, because one thing this game will tell you right off the bat is that role players are more imaginative and intelligent and likely to be immortal super gods than other people.
Yeah, it's because you're supposed to play as yourself, they're like, oh, well, we've got an in-character thing where one immortal is describing, like, oh, well, it only makes sense that our ingenue brothers who have forgotten that they were immortal would be drawn to role-playing, because only the most intelligent and creative people would be drawn to this imaginative way of expressing themselves in the world. And you're like, okay, I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. You had my dick in your mouth for too much of that.
I know. At the risk of sounding like a dumb jock who is the opposite of our fan base, wouldn't people who are actually immortal and remembering that they're immortal be drawn to doing stuff instead of pretending to do stuff?
I feel like
they'd be all like base jumpers and you know, like firemen and stuff, and not like, oh, I'm pretending to be a fireman. It's fun.
Well, because you don't remember you're an immortal. So you're like, all I know is that I'm some dumpy guy.
Yeah.
And so you'd think in your head, like, oh, well, what should I be doing? What I should be doing is fighting giant dragons and fucking casting spells. And since, as a Twilight, the name they give to mortals, is not able to do that, you're like, oh, well, I have to do that, so I'll have to do it in a game, then.
Which is weird, because it's like they've completely misinterpreted the role-playing game subculture, which really is more along the lines of, well, I feel like I should be fucking giant dragons.
Yeah, that's right. Anyone who plays a role-playing game is a dirty dragon fetishist.
Dragon fucking furries is what they are.
Yeah, man. I remember reading Dragon Fancier magazine.
That's our new policy we're going to take on episode 58 of System Mastery, the role-playing game review podcast. We hate role-players.
Yep, we finally did it. Role-playing games have ruined us to the point where now we hate role-playing games and role-players. Everything associated with it is terrible. If I see another D10, I swear to God I'm going to shove it right up someone's ass.
I'm never setting foot in a basement for the rest of my life. Granted, as California gamers, neither of us has ever been in a fucking basement.
No. Like, I think maybe I've been in a basement in my life, and it wasn't when I was in California.
Yeah, no, we don't have basements here. Hey, the podcat.
Hey, it's Izzy the podcat.
All right, she's chased away. So, yeah, this game spends a lot of time sort of verbally filleting role players for some reason, which is weird, because any role player who reads it's going to be like, man, this is weird and terrible. I could do better.
Oh, well, yeah, we gave this book to at least 2 people who read that section and were like, aw, don't say no, that. Aw. This is stupid.
Yeah.
It'd be the same thing if you were like, all right, guys, we know that you're really into, like, doing track and field, and just having your coach come out there and go, look, you track and field guys are the best. Man, the most creative, brilliant athletes would ever be in the 50-yard dash.
You get that same degree of embarrassed for yourself and the person talking to you that you would if you're, like, in your 30s, and your girlfriend for your birthday gives you an acrostic made of your name. If they're like, J is for jumpy, because sometimes you get scared. You're like, this is, what the, are we really, that's the feel you get.
Those feels.
I'm so embarrassed for everyone here.
Yeah, the idea that this book needed to do that, like, normally you have at the beginning of books where they're like, oh, what's a role-playing game? Her-der-der. And you're like, okay, yeah, no, that's fine. I've come to expect this level of embarrassment out of any game that I'm going to play. But when it has to go on and try to tell me what a special snowflake I am, like, just stop. You're making me embarrassed.
I feel like it's almost easy not to blame the book for it, because it's 1994. It's before the internet took over the role of telling everyone how special they are.
Yeah. Thanks, Immortal, for being proto-Tumblr.
Thank you. I'm glad I was able to read you and learn that I am as special as I thought I was. All right, we really got to talk about this game a little. Let's talk about these six stats that make up your Halo.
My Halo.
I can see your Halo.
Yeah.
It's hanging on the corner of your girlfriend's four-post bed. Also, what's up with your old-fashioned girlfriend? I mean, get a regular bed. Come on.
What's with that four-post bed?
I've always wanted one of those beds that has, like, the curtains you can draw out around it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, that would be great, because then you've got that double layer of jerk-off protection, where, like, normally if someone just opens your door and you're going at it, they're like, ah, I see ya. But if you got them curtains drawn, you can hear them open the door, and then you're like, oh, I gotta cover up.
Get a second to...
And then they open the curtains, and you're just laid out doing, like, the Burt Reynolds pose, like, hey.
Hey there. I often do this. No, that's only the declining half of a boner.
Ah, the declining half of a boner.
It's the twilight years of that boner.
It's the mortal years of that boner?
These are the days of that boner.
Like sands through an hourglass, so are the days of our boner.
Wait, you jerk off in bed? Is it 1994 where you live?
Hey, man.
Internet, it's so great.
Hey, what is it, fucking 2000 where you live? I have a smartphone now.
See, I like my nipples to be larger than a pixel.
I like my nipples to be larger than life. Dun, 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 dun.
Well, I've often heard it said that when your nipples are large enough, vodka abounds.
That's a saying.
It's a callback.
That's not a saying, that's a callback.
All right, don't call it a callback. All right, we got to talk about the Halo. John, you're really good at this, so I'm going to list the colors of the Halo, and you tell me what they
do.
Great. Red.
Red is for your mind. It is... splitting the difference between your intellect and your mental resolve. So if you have red as a high stat, you are smart, but also resistant to things like mind control and stuff like that.
Orange.
Orange is your strength. It is how physically strong you are, how much you can lift. You can lift like a cat.
Yeah, if you have a low physical strength, a low orange, you can lift a cat. Let's see, yellow.
Yellow is how deft you are. So... how good you are at hitting things. It's your basic combat stat. It would be generally dexterity in most of the, like, White Wolf games.
Okay, and then green?
Green is how fast you are. It is your movement stat. So instead of being derived from something like your yellow, green is its own thing. So you could be super good at being accurate and hitting things, but also just very slow. So it's your fat marksman.
Very good. Well, once again, this game is pandering to the nerd community.
Hey, hey, hey. It's Fat Marksman.
I'm picturing Fat Albert as Bullseye right now.
Oh my god, Fat Bullseye. Thank you.
Fat Bullseye.
Thank you, Fat Bullseye.
I never miss. Oh, I never miss a buffet.
No, that's a great new character for the ages.
Thank you.
Blue?
Blue is your awareness and perception stat, so how far you can see, how good you are at noticing things, how easy it is for you to smell something's off when Fat Marksman shows up.
A fat bullseye. I threw a bullet at Belinda. And it bounced off the balustrade and hit her in the back of the neck.
Thank you, Fat Bullseye.
Oh, I got to say balustrade. All right, and then that leaves one last stat, which I believe is purple.
Yep.
Or violet. It's one of those.
Yeah, purple is your physical resistance. It's sort of your stamina stat. Mm-hmm. It's your personal armor, so resistance to damage, mm-hmm. but also is like your resistance to like feeling worn out or tired or resisting poison and stuff like that.
Right. And so basically your red is effectively your heart and your green is your clovers.
Your blue is your horseshoes.
Yeah.
Your yellow is your stars.
And your pots and gold and rainbows. And the red balloons. All right. No, So basically, those six stats make up your Halo. And your Halo is actually sensible by other Immortals, and the only way that you can take damage in the game of, or for reals damage that matters in the game of Immortal, is for to have someone right up next to you so that their Halo is touching your Halo.
Yeah, well, it's weird because they also refer to your stats collectively as your Halo,
yeah.
And then each stat individually as a Halo.
Yeah, so you have a Violet Halo, for example, but it's just one of the Halo rings inside your Halo. It's like the rings of Saturn in there. That's, you have a rainbow surrounding you all the time, and the various depths of the individual shades of the rainbow really tell you a lot about who you are as a person.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, I'm more of a harvest yellow Halo. Like, I think you're more of a sandalwood.
Well, I'm kind of a tea green. I have a large section of eggshell.
I'm more of a Sarah than a tea green.
I like it. Tegan and Sarah. They're a band. They're sisters and they're both gay. And they have a really good song I like. Yeah. They actually probably have a lot of them, but not Ghosts. That song's terrible.
Not their popular ones.
No, well, that was the one that was popular in like the very late 90s or early 2000s. I was walking with a ghost.
Oh, no.
I said ghost. Like, just correct yourself in the middle. Like you heard something else. You were walking with a host?
No, I said ghost.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was walking with Patrick Swayze.
You were walking with the ghost?
Yeah.
With the most?
No, I was not walking with Beetlejuice.
All right, so your Halos are collectively referred to as your Forte. Those are the base stats that you have, and they are immutable.
Yeah, those are your set stats.
Yes.
So if I've got a 3 in my green Halo,
mm-hmm.
that means no matter what, I have 3 motes in green,
mm-hmm.
so my speed, even if something else changes, is going to be 3 in that, because that matters, because you have free Immaculum.
Oh, free Immaculum?
I'll take it.
Oh, man, normally you got to pay 50 cents per Immacula.
Oh, man, I remember when McDonald's switched over to the you have to pay for extra packets of Immaculum.
Oh, yeah, that was the worst.
I was like, come on.
And it was really annoying, because then you'd have to ask them for them when you were going through the drive-thru. You were like, hey, can I get some of that barbecue Immaculum? I mean, I got all these nugs, bro.
Come on, give me some of that honey sriracha Immaculum.
And they were like,
I'm sorry, it isn't free.
It's 18 cents per extra Immaculum. And you're like, oh, why didn't you tell me that at the window? All I have is a card.
So your free Immaculum are points you don't put into anything specifically. So we said you got 15 points to put in your 6 stats. You could say, I'm completely average. I have a 2 in everything. And 3... floating free Immaculum.
Yeah, although I don't think that's actually how you can do a character creation. I think all 15 of your points have to go into your Forte. But you can eventually, using the 100 points you get during character creation to do whatever you want, buy some free Immacula and have that floating around. So you can have some free Immaculum at the start of the game. Now, free Immaculum works like this. At the end of every time you do anything, it goes back up into your into your Halo and just floating Immaculum. But every time you do something, every time you have a
clash
during an escapade. No, wait, an escapade is a series of actions. A clash is...
No, it's a clash in an escalade. Yeah, it's when you're getting in a fight with Jay-Z. I'm having a clash in an escalade.
I put all the members of the clash into an escalade.
No,
the Flash, who is Barry Allen, by the way, into an Escalade. I don't know why. I mean, he can run so fast.
No, it's when you have a clash during an escapade, is with Janet Jackson, and she takes you on an escapade.
Yeah, I'm sure she does. And then I think that makes up a round or something. It doesn't matter. It's probably not a round, because one thing this game doesn't like is normal gaming terms for things.
Yeah, I think the overarching one for that is the only one that's an actual term. So it's like clash, escapade, and then round.
Okay, sure. Anyway, every time there's a clash, you can reassign your Immaculum into various halos of your Forte. So for example, if you want go like, I really want to hit this guy. I need to buff up my accuracy. So I'm going to take my 3 floating Immaculum and put them into my yellow Halo. So instead of having a 3 in my yellow Halo, I have a 6 for the purposes of this clash.
Which takes you above the normal human maximum, which would be 5.
So that's basically how it's cool to be an immortal. Now, you may be finding yourself wondering, what do I do with a 6 in that? What's the basic mechanic of this game? Well, let me tell you, if you read the very beginning of this game, one of the things it tells you, just like every role-playing game, is it gives you the list of things you need to have in order to play. You need to have some friends, you need to have soft music, maybe it'd be useful to have some katanas around, for display only, of course. And In this case, you need 6 D10s of different colors. And then you need 3 more D10s, also of different colors. But these are going to be monochromatic D10s. Because you need a D10 for every color of your halo. And you need 3 D10s in white, black, and gray to represent the allies. Or Abaddon, Aether, and Orenda, which would also be known as Destruction, Creation, and Change.
Yeah. Which, reading that, I go, well, you don't. You don't need it. Because they then, after explaining how you need all that, they're like, or you could just roll a D10 and say what it's going for.
Yeah, you can say what color it is when you roll
it. Like, I'm rolling this for red.
I really like the idea. At the end of the day, you need a white, black, gray, red, blue, yellow, green, orange, purple, and I think that's all of them.
Yeah, that's everything.
That's D10s.
Yeah, which
I have. I mean, I'm a huge nerd. I have that.
Oh, no. The reason they did that is because you also, at the back of the book, have an ad for their Buy Our Immortal Dice. You're like, oh, of course. You're trying to sell 9 D10s to people. Okay, I get it.
The funny thing to me is that you can... That's not good enough. You will occasionally have to roll the same halo twice during a... So here's what happens. This is... Normally, it would be assumed that your immortal would succeed at everything. Everything he wanted to do, he
if something
could just do.
Doesn't get in your way, you're considered to be succeeding at
so
it.
So dice in this game aren't your aptitude, they're shit getting in your way. They're your obstacles. And so what you need to do is roll above them on what are called hostiles. Which is so
again, this game does not want to use a term that any other game uses.
Yeah.
Every single one of its game terms, every single one of its terms for your character or anything in the world is made up dumb bullshit. And it's terrible.
So basically, in this game, the best thing you could possibly do is be rolling 0 or 1 D10. That's what you want. But what's actually going to happen is, every time there's a small hindrance in your way, it creates an additional hostile. So for example, let's say you would like to shoot a man. All right? Shooting someone is going to be something that reflects out of your green halo, I think.
Yellow.
That's your, or yellow. I'm sorry, your yellow halo. That's your marksmanship. We just talked about
yeah,
Fat Bullseye.
Yeah, come on, man.
I'm sorry. I thought for some reason you said green and then we got into Fat Bullseye. I don't know. So, first of all, shooting someone is fairly difficult. You need to be able to line that shot up. So that's going to be a yellow hostile. So you need to roll a D10 with a difficulty that's used on a scale of 3 per scale of difficulty. So, for example, a
yeah,
very
it's a,
easy
it's a 1 to 5, yeah. But each one is 3. So you have to beat a 3, a 6, a 9, a 12, or a 15.
Correct. So let's say shooting that guy isn't especially difficult. He's close, and you're good at shooting people. So you have to beat a 3.
Now, yeah, sure. That's not going to be hard.
That's not going to be hard, especially because you probably have a 2 or a 3 as a starting character in your yellow halo anyway. Also, you're going to add the value of your shooting attention, which this attention...
Well, talent.
Talent. Because
the attention is a different thing from your talent.
You're right. I'm sorry. In this game, talents are your skills, and there are like 3 million of them. And we'll get to that in just a second. There are way too many.
Yeah.
But let's say you took the rifle attention... The right rifle attention for the type of rifle you're trying to shoot, because there's way too many. And you have a rank 2 in that, so you're going to add a 2 to your forte of 3. Any free immaculum we like to add, you can put that in there, but let's say you don't. Right now, you've got a grand total of 5. You're going to roll a D10, you're going to add 5. All you got to do is beat that 3, no problem.
Yeah.
But let's say it's slightly cloudy out. Oh my gosh, that activates the visibility hostile. Now you have to see through the visibility. I believe that's going to be a blue.
Yep, so you're going to have to roll blue in addition to your yellow. And when you do this, it's not like some games will say, oh, well, it's, you know, difficult to see, so you're at a penalty. So you're like -2. Or you need to be able to roll to notice someone before you can attack them. Here you roll all of your dice in one action at the same time.
You must, in essence, you must defeat the visibility.
Yeah, and so the weird thing about that is, when you're rolling for your hostiles for these, like, I've got, we'll just say all you have is the yellow and the blue. So, you've got a blue hostile for your vision, you've got a yellow for trying to shoot someone. You're going to roll both of them. Let's say the blue one, it's super foggy, so it's actually a 6 difficulty.
Oh, so foggy.
So, if I roll, and my blue's not great, and I took my free immaculum and I actually put it into my yellow so I'd be better... at that point, I'm looking at my blue, and I'm like, well, I've only got a 2 in that. I don't really have any special skill in seeing through fog. I didn't take any of the attentions to negate penalties.
Uh-huh. So you just have to beat whatever... You have to roll a D10 and then beat whatever that fog hostile, which we said was a 6.
So let's say I roll a 2. I've got a 4. I didn't beat the fog hostile by 2. But because it was 3 for the yellow shoot-a-guy hostile, and I rolled a 5... And so I got up to a 10.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I have to take points of success away from the yellow until I meet the blue, which is essentially saying, this is now a penalty because I didn't beat it. Right. So I would be minus two on my yellow. So instead of hitting him with a 10 accuracy, I hit him with an 8.
So this is supposed to be a fast, easy system that reflects, that lets you, like on the fly, react to weird changing conditions. But in reality, it ends up being a, okay, after I roll everything, I have to do a bunch of math as I subtract things from various things until all of these are hit successes.
And the fact that each different hostile can have a different rating for how difficult it is. So it's like, all right, so the yellow one was a 3, the blue one was a 6. I was trying to move, so that was a green hostile at a 9. However, I was also in pain, and to resist pain, I needed a red hostile, and I was super in pain, so that was a 12. And you're like, okay, wait a minute, which number was for what?
Yeah.
And it ends up being a giant pain in the ass the more dice you add.
Now, if any of them end up a failure because you don't have enough points to spread around at your final roll to push them all into being successes, then you fail at the roll. So any given hostile that fails causes you to fail. Also, if you roll a 0, then you have a null. And if you roll a null, because, by the way, the scale goes from 1 to 9 on the success chart, the 0 on the D10 is an actual 0 and not a 10, like in most systems.
Yeah.
If you roll that 0, any 0 on any of the dice hostiles you roll at any time automatically causes you to fail that ability check. You don't need to do any math. You just failed.
Yeah, so if I'm trying to shoot someone and I'm rolling 3 hostile dice because I'm trying to do 3 things at once, if any of them show a 0, you fail everything. It doesn't matter. And this means that no matter how good you are, like, they talk about these ridiculous old immortals who are like, oh yeah, the average human is at a 2. I've got a 12 in some stat.
Oh, I'm the highest rank in the pride of the Nimrod, and I'm the greatest hunter in all the world. I have 5 ranks in shooting people, and I have a 14 in my yellow halo for shooting people.
Yeah, you're like, the highest difficulty of anything is 15. That's as high as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, if I'm one of the elder immortals, and I've got a 10 in something stat-wise, and a 5 in something for my talent, I can't fail except 1 in 10 times when I try to do it. It's like how, you know, when you're a neurosurgeon and 1 in 10 times your surgery, you just kill a guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've made this joke before. We've actually done this exact same line of comedy before about 1 in 20. We did that back in Haven.
Yeah.
But City of Violence. I'm sorry. I don't know why you're interrupting me there.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I'm so rude interrupting your City of Violence.
Thank you. Thank you. But we've made jokes about the 1 in 20 because of all the D20 games where they give you the automatic failure on a 1. This is a 1 in 10. This is a 10% chance, no matter how competent you are, that you're going to fail on something, even in the best conditions.
And a lot of games, even if they have a 1 as a failure on some things, it's not for everything. Like, you look at a D&D, and even then, like, you might always miss hitting someone on a 1, but if I'm rolling a skill, I can still roll a 1 and be okay.
Yeah, do you know how rare the actual 1 is a critical fumble thing is in real D&D? It's super rare. That's a house rule.
Oh, it's, yeah. Well, I mean, it's a house rule in this to be critical, but it's straight up the rules of you just auto-fail a 0.
That's correct, yeah. So, this game is a comedy of errors, and also the side effect of this, which I'm not sure if they predicted or not, is that the best way to play this game is to force additional environmental penalties onto your enemies all the time to make them fish for zeros.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those things where you look at other games, they have things like, say, a smoke grenade or a flashbang or like a taser or some poison or whatever, and you mostly look at that and go, oh, that's kind of a weird, goofy one-off thing. Maybe it gives them a minus 2 to hit me for a round, or it does a penalty to their ability to do a perception roll. But in this, you're like, oh, I threw a smoke grenade in that room, and now you have to also roll a blue hostile, which means I have just bumped your chance of fucking yourself way up.
Yeah. So basically, the whole point of this game is to be like, all right, I'm going to get up into a high place, and then I'm going to throw, like, goo on the floor so that they're slow and sticky and they have to roll a green hostile. I'm going to throw a smoke grenade to make them roll a blue hostile. And then I'm going to, like, run shocks through the floor so that they're constantly getting electrocuted, causing a red hostile. And let's see if they roll a 0.
Oh, yeah, because if you can force someone to roll more than one die, it goes from that whole 1 in 10, which is already garbage, to being like, oh, yeah, basically 1 in 3 times I'm trying to do anything, I just slip and fall on my ass and look like an idiot.
Right.
Which, again, even if you are, like, a god among immortals, you're like, oh yes, I'm the leader of immortals, I'm the most powerful person ever, and I will attempt to pick something up. Oh, I fell down, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, guys!
Well, at least you can fuck a pumpkin.
Really, I was thinking that was more like Ray Romano. Like, oh, come on, guys.
Hey.
Oh, I'm an immortal, guys.
I can't tell if I'm Ray Romano or Kermit the Frog.
Oh, Deb. I was trying to do something.
I don't know, Deb. Maybe because you're a bitch.
Yeah. So, that it's just... it's insane to me. The cat.
So we're being invaded by a cat today. She's very eager to say hi to us. So sorry about that, everyone. Anyway, it's insane to me that the whole point of this game is to force goofball errors on each other.
Oh yeah, if you're playing this correctly to the best of your ability, this game turns into Keystone Cops.
Yeah, it's basically kind of a bastardized, shitty version of the famous Duckman engine.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, you can really tell, considering Duckman came out 2 years before this, you can really tell they were trying to go for that.
Can't be right. The Duckman show was on the air in the late 90s.
Yeah, well, Duckman came out in the early 90s.
Oh, so what we're saying now is that the Duckman show is based on the role-playing game?
Yeah, obviously.
Oh, okay, great. We're going to add that to the
Oh, God. Okay, so that's... basically, how you do something is rolling one or more D10s and then fucking up at everything.
If I may, John, I'd really like to tell people how they derive their hit points in this game.
Yes, that is one of your other stats. Now, you might be thinking, you know, I heard that purple was one of the stats, and it was your stamina and your resistance to damage.
Isn't it violet? I feel like it's violet.
It's purple. Okay. Violet is one of the shades you can have.
Oh, okay. You can have a violet shade of purple.
Yeah.
How many hit points do you have? A lighter shade of pale.
I've got Purple Rain as my halo.
So, but no, you don't use your purple halo to calculate your hit points. Instead, get this, folks, this is my favorite thing I've read in a role-playing game in a long goddamn time. You use your weight.
Not now, your character's weight. Not your character. Your weight.
Your personal human weight.
And the fatter you are, the more hit points you have.
Don't worry, Tubbins. That's not Pizza Hut. It's hit points.
Yeah, no, in addition to this game just filleting the nerds who are playing it by saying they're more intelligent and creative, they're also just saying, look, Fatso, you may be huge, but that just means that you are more resistant. You've got more to you.
And the weird thing is the breakpoint that matters, because there's a whole bunch of breakpoints, and they end it like, oh, you weigh 400 tons because your hipsati is insane. It ranges from 61 to 125 pounds, and then 125 to 250 pounds, and then 250 to, like, 400 pounds. So that means that the break point where at which you want to min-max your character for to get the extra hit point is to beat that 250.
Oh, yeah, you're putting on weight like you're trying to get into a wrestling match.
I think that gets you another, like, severe wound.
You're sitting there carbo-loading, like, come on, man, I want to get into heavyweight. If I'm in heavyweight, then I'm going to be way better if I'm in bantamweight.
Look, original House of Pancakes... I need to get another hit point, all right? So I'm going to come in there at 11.
Look, man, I need to go to the pizza buffet, and I am not leaving.
Oh, we just did that. That was an unpleasant rest of the day. Thank you very much, whatever that pizza place was. Mountain Mike's.
Mountain Mike's. Thank you, Mountain Mike's, for your beautiful pizza bar where we can go and just feel real bad about ourselves for hours at a time.
No one should put the words pizza and bar together. Anyway... so yeah, hit points are derived from your real physical human weight.
Hooray.
I don't know why. You know what? No, I do know. I know why. I think we all know why.
Yeah, it's so I can have more hit points.
Every frozen pizza you buy off the rack is an extra hit point for you.
Thank you, Red Baron. You're giving me so many HPs.
What do you want on your tombstone? Health.
little discs of health.
Which is the best and worst of those various frozen pizzas at the store, anyway?
Well, the best is Red Baron, because it is the cheapest, largest pizza.
That is
true. As a professional poorsman, yeah. I know the most pizza I can get for the fewest dollars is Red Baron.
I'd say the worst is probably the Totino's Party Pizza, is that correct?
Oh my god, it's the cheapest, because it's like $1.
It's $1.
But it's, I don't know, maybe like... a tortilla's worth of food.
Yeah, it's and also pepperoni is kind of a weird joke on those. It's got cubes of something.
Yeah, little cubes of probably meat. In fact, it's capitalized, probably meat, TM Totino's.
All right, so We mentioned earlier the other three colors in this game, because we just talked about your basic rainbow colors, but then there are also the monochromatics, the black, gray, and white.
Yeah, your Abaddon, and your Aether, and your Orida.
Hey, speaking of frozen... Okay, it's Orenda, which is actually, I'm pretty sure, an Indian tribe, but no, Orida, of course, is the frozen foods brand, which...
Yeah,
no. Getting right back on track.
I go ahead and cast my sweet potato fry spell.
I like those ones that are basically Chris Cuts.
Yeah, Chris Krotz. Chris Krotz.
Chris Krotz.
Welcome to Chris Krotz.
I can't think of anything funny for that to be.
That's my new...
If you had just gone to Chris Krotz, we'd be fine.
Yeah, the Chris Krotz.
Sorry to all of our listeners named Chris.
Aw, and we're sorry about your crotch.
We're sorry about your terrible, terrible crotch.
Sorry about that crotchal situation you got going on there, Chris.
I feel like we all are. Everyone else is in solidarity with you.
Our thoughts and prayers are with your crotch.
I stand with Chris's crotch.
Hashtag Chris's crotch.
All right, so actually it's Orenda, and those represent destruction, creation, and change. They only show up during this game's annoying, esoterically named spellcasting system, Serenades.
Yep, Serenades are effectively your spells, and the reason they're called Serenades is because you are singing a change into the world.
Because of vibrations and mystical energy and... You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say probably dolphins. I'm not sure how, but dolphins, right?
I'm almost certain that crystals and incense are involved somehow.
Yeah, it's got to be some kind of combination of crystals, astrology, and dolphins by which you manage to sing the song of the universe.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, I'm a Sagittarius, so when I sing a serenade to the blue halo, it's a little more effective because a Sagittarius is a little more in tune and aware.
I realize you're doing a bit, but I was offended for a second because I was like, fuck you, I'm a Sagittarius. You're not a Sagittarius. Get out of my sign.
Get out of here. You're not a Sagittarius. You don't know what it's like living as a Sagittarius in a Virgo's world.
As Sagittarius, people constantly forget that I'm a sign of any kind. It's the last one, and so everyone's always like, meh. Sagittariuses are left over.
No, man. We've gone over this. Sagittarius, you're a philosopher.
I'm a philosopher. I thought I was like a water carrier or a horse archer or something.
Oh, no. Now I remember. Yeah. You're a bitch.
What are you again?
I'm a Virgo.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah. I'm really quiet, and I like to organize things, just like every Virgo. We're all the same.
That's true. Also, fear sex. Just, like, terrified of it.
Oh, yeah. Every time someone's like, hey, sex, and I'm like, oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Oh, my stars and goddesses.
I'll be in the closet for an indeterminate number of years.
I'm a log cabin Republican?
Wait, I never said you were a Republican. I wouldn't do anything so heartless.
The jokes.
All right. So, serenades are the vibrations by which you bring change to the universe, or destruction or creation to the universe, etc., etc. They work exactly the same in skills, in that you get a number of points to buy them, and they cost a number of points based on their complexity, and when you purchase ranks of them, you get various abilities. You can just sort of sing into the universe by rolling against the hostiles associated by what you want to do. So, for example, if you pick the one that lets you talk to animals, which I believe is called Bubastis...
Yeah.
Then...
Mr. Bubastis, really fantastic.
Which I'm not sure if they actually... because all of them have dumb names like that. I'm not sure if they were actually pulling from the ancient Egyptian city of Bubastis, which means the House of Bast, which maybe means that they were talking about cat inflections, or if they're just Watchmen dorks.
Yes, both.
I mean, when was Watchmen written?
I don't know.
The 80s, is that correct?
Sure, why not?
I don't know. I'm going
to
get corrected.
Well, I mean,
that.
It was really close to the time when 3rd Edition came out, which I think was 1993.
1993, yeah. Let's just keep trolling people. We've got this problem where people keep leaving us emails and comments that we don't know when 3rd Edition came out. And they're right, but really, I know it came out in the early 2000s. I know, but... I don't care about 2nd Edition in the slightest because it's not funny. It's a workmanlike, decent edition that you can play if you want. 3rd Edition is a hilarious pastiche failure, and 4th Edition has its own whole kind of weird conglomeration of complaints about it. 2nd Edition, I prefer to ignore. I'm happy with that. 3rd Edition's the fun one.
Yeah, I'd really rather talk about that.
Right, I mean, the only things worth talking about in 2nd Edition are that picture right after the bard, which is a giant king checking out a topless genie with a lizard tail.
Also, the introduction of the Wild Mage. Yeah.
No, you love the Wild Mage. That's kind of your jam.
Yeah, that is my Jenga jam.
Yeah, and also, for me, the Sorial, of course, because I'm a dinosaur idiot.
Oh, yeah. So, which is why you love the Absalom.
I do. I love the Absalom. Do we want to talk about this game?
No. No, we don't.
We don't want to talk about the Absalom, which are the dinosaur immortals from the game Immortal, The Invisible War?
No, we'll get to that later.
Can you play as one? No, you can't. Anyway, Sorials are basically the dinosaurs of Forgotten Realms.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So, your Serenades are basically ranked 1 to 4, or 1 to 5, and your first ranks, just like in a lot of games, are worthless.
Oh, they're bullshit. They're things like, you can tell an animal is angry if it looks angry, using the animal sensibility.
Like, your level 1 ability for, destruction. I'm going to destroy inanimate objects is, I have this at rank 1. I can rip paper with my voice. You're like, or your hands.
Yeah.
Bro, come on.
Or your feet, or by telling someone else to rip that paper for you real quick.
Scuffing it up with your foot? I mean, come on.
Okay, so, like we mentioned earlier, there are these three other colors that are called the allies, and they represent raw serenades. So if you have the ability of serenades at all, then you also have the ability to simply access creation, destruction, or change.
Yeah, now you don't have stats. Like, you don't have an Abaddon stat for your black die.
No.
You don't have a stat for Aether. What you have instead is just that die that you roll. So, serenades tend to be harder to do than normal actions, because when you're doing it, you are just adding your D10 and your serenade skill rather than a stat.
Right. And the other thing about serenades that keeps you from wanting to spend all of your skill points on just serenades is that if you roll a null when you try to cast a serenade on any of the dice you need to roll, instead of just failing, you earn a point of taint.
Yeah, you get that taint.
You get that stank taint.
Yeah, man. And then the taint goes right into your halo, whatever your best halo is, and every point of taint in a halo reduces the effective motes you can use by one.
Yeah.
So if I have a 3 in yellow, and I get a point of taint in my yellow because that's my highest stat, then I effectively have a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can throw some free immaculum in there, and I can raise it later, but the only way to get rid of taint is to basically feed off of humans.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was just...
No, that's the only way to clean your taint.
Yeah, just take a quick shower.
Is to just scrub under the folds.
Just get in there and give it a scrub down. I mean, if you got too much red in your taint, then you got to get in there and fix that, because...
Oh, man, when you got that red taint...
Yeah.
Doctor, I got green taint. You got any ointment for that?
No, but I got a salve.
I've got a tincture.
A tincture. I've got a balm for green taint. You want that salve, you need that for a yellow taint. You get that yellow taint, you're going to need to come in here and get a salve and a balm.
Oh, man. Yellow taint is... That's my fetish. I'm always on yellowtaint.com.
I feel like that's going to be way more racist than I'm expecting off the top of my head.
No, that's if I was into red taint.
Red taint to me sounds like a band. Or no, wait, like a comedian from the 50s.
Red taint.
I'm red taint. I'm coming for you, Elizabeth! Alright, so basically, if you fuck up when casting a serenade, you really fuck yourself up. And if you get enough taint, if all of your immaculum are taken over by taint, then your character effectively ascends to someplace we're probably not even going to talk about during this podcast, because all we're talking is rules this time. We'll get to the story next time, which is the Dominion. Just let it be known, it's basically... Like
you discorporate.
Hell, you discorporate and you go someplace else. And we'll talk about where else on the next episode.
Yeah.
So hang on, folks.
Just you wait. We'll get to that. Now, as I said, the problem with being tainted is you have to feed off of immaculum from humans. And there's two ways you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it if they are willing and they just give you some of their energy, which is... sort of fucked up, but whatever. You just take some of the living energy out of a human. You, I guess, basically replace your tainted immaculum with their normal immaculum.
Uh-huh. And you basically vampire them a little bit.
Well, the other thing you do is vampire them because you take it without their their consent.
One of them is the lullaby or something like that.
Well, the lullaby is when you forget that someone fed off you.
Right. Okay, good enough. So basically, you can go up to humans, and this is why immortals like hanging around with humans, who they refer to as Twilights.
Yep.
They like to hang around near humans, because humans are great sources of extra immaculum all the time, except there's all kinds of rules about why you can or can't take sweet juice.
Well, the main problem is, if you aren't taking it consensually, if you just go ahead and, like, walk up to some guy and are like, oh, I reach out into your halo and just grab some immaculum and run off with it.
You say as you run away.
The immaculum burglar, and you're just like, immaculum, immaculum.
Immaculum, immaculum. Give me some of that immaculum.
Then, at that point, the humans have a thing called the Religarum.
The Religarum. If you try to steal immaculum from an unwilling and aware human, then they will Religarum the crap out of you with their own superpower, which is Religarum.
Now, Religarum is just faith, but they couldn't call it faith. They had to call it Religarum. But what it means is humans have a magic ability that if they believe something hard enough about an immortal, it becomes true.
So what you're saying, basically, in effect, is that humans gotta have faith.
Well, they don't have to.
Oh, okay, but they do generally gotta have faith.
No, because they don't.
I just want you to say yes, because every picture in this book looks like George Michael. Come on, go with me here.
No, that's why they don't. I am not gonna improv class with you. There is no yes and in this podcast.
Well, let's just pass this energy ball back and forth with me, John.
Oh, well, it looks like I'm Mike Tyson.
And I'm sitting in front of him in the movie theater. It's too bad I'm Abe Lincoln with a big hat.
I think it might go a little bit something like this. Sorry. Okay. So, yeah. The whole problem with Religarum in humans is that if you run up to someone and let's say you have a snake Himsati. Your Himsati is essentially your animal totem.
Yeah.
It is the thing that you sprung forth from whenever you became an immortal.
No matter what you are, you're never... Well, some of them are human immortals, but most immortals are like, oh, I was a wolf that became immortal and then decided to wear the skin of a human.
Yeah. So what happens is, if I come up and let's say I've got a snake totem or whatever I am, and I attack a guy and just take his immaculum and run off...
Mm-hmm.
If the guy believes, for some reason, that I had, say, snakes for hair, all of a sudden, you become Medusa.
Yeah.
And that's how all of the, like, ancient mythological beasts and things came about, is humans believed something when they were getting attacked or when they saw something. So that's how vampires, werewolves, anything like that came about, because humans believed it strong enough that it physically changed the immortal into being that.
Oh, yeah. I remember when that happened to me in, like, the early 80s. I was trying to take this guy's immaculum, and he thought I was going to steal his pizza. And all of a sudden, I had, like, socks for ears, and I was, like, red, and I had buck teeth. That was a terrible time for me.
Oh, that was terrible. I kept avoiding you during that time. Yeah. The journey.
The journey to the joke. Step one, immortals can steal things. Step two, the Noid.
Step three, podcast gold.
Profit. Oh my god.
Yeah. So that's
one of the fun things in the sidebar for the book is it mentions that the greatest Religarum in history, the strongest Religarum of any human in history, is P.T. Barnum.
Oh, he was the human with the strongest Religarum because he was part of the Apocrypha, which, again, we'll get into this dumb bullshit.
Next book, or next episode.
But the fact that P.T. Barnum was like, apparently one of the greatest villains of a mortal life, because he could believe anything into being.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So, that's...
Okay, so in addition to that, we didn't really get into so much your... what is it? The attentions.
Yes.
We sort of
mentioned... Skills. There are skills in this game called attentions. They split into three categories. Serenades, we talked about them already. Skills, basically you get...
Well, it's talents... Serenades and attentions.
Yeah, okay, so, sorry. Talents are skills, so there you go.
Serenades are your magic, and then attentions
are immunities.
Yeah, it's... This game has pages of problems that you will run into for hostiles.
Yes.
So it's things like, it's slippery, it's dark out, it's...
slightly cold.
So raven.
You have the babbler. The babbler, which is when your Himsati form is trying to take over your brain, and so...
No, that's when your brain keeps communicating across hemispheres because your corpus callosum is too thick.
I know, but it's effectively connected to your Himsati form. We've discussed this. We've read this book a lot. We're the only two people in the world who could have this conversation. But anyway, So all so there that, are these attentions which allow you to simply ignore certain hostiles.
Yeah, so the more points you put into something, let's say I think my character has a high pain tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So the red hostile of pain is one that I go, oh, my guy should probably be able to ignore that fairly well. So you can get a couple points into it, and what it does is every point in there reduces the difficulty of whatever that hostile would be.
Correct.
So if I've got, let's go with the pain one, if I've got 1 point in resisting pain hostiles, and I would have to roll a rank 2, so a 6 on the hostile, having a rank 1 means it drops it down by 3, so now I only have to roll a 3.
Right.
Great.
So that's what those do. And then you also have talents, which are just your skills. And there are about 380 of them because they split everything up way too much. All you do is you get a couple points in them and then you add them to your roll when you try to defeat a hostile that's relevant. So, for example, let's say your character takes the lapidary talent because this game, again, has 380 of these. Your character now has a bonus when he wants to cut gems or set precious stones.
Oh, well, what happens if I want to be stealthy?
Oh, well, that's easy because stealth has been split into 7 convenient skills, including prowl, probe, prowl urban, hide in shadows, sneak, not be detected, and hide.
Good. Great.
For some reason, they split everything into a million skills. I feel like you could just take whichever one you want because your DM's not going to be like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure that's a prowl urban role that you have to make because he's not going to remember all those.
No. Well, that or he's going to have the list in front of him and be like, oh man, I'll find it. I'll find the right thing
for
you.
The list is 3 pages. It would slow the game down so much. And when I say 3 pages, I know most books have like a 3 to 5 page skill section. That's fine. We're talking 1 line per page single space or per skill single space.
Yeah.
All they are is things like mountaineering. Your character is good at
mountaineering.
Mountaineering. The next one, bicycling. Your character can ride a bike. That's all they are. All of it. There's no mechanical effect of these other than that they add their rank in dots to your roll. They add to your forte or to your halo when you roll against a hostile related to that.
Now, the weird thing is, we talked about the babbler a little, which is your left and right hemispheres communicating too much, which causes you to kind of go insane.
Yeah.
But there's also a weird thing that is a hostile roll that you'll need to make, but also kind of an odd mechanic in the game for role-playing, which is your avatar role.
Yeah, yeah.
Your avatar is you have gone through Lethe and forgotten who you were.
Mm-hmm.
Every time a character goes through Lethe and forgets who he was, what his past life becomes an avatar in his brain, and you basically have multiple personalities at that point.
Yes.
So if I, say, have only gone through once, then occasionally that past one life will try to jump in. But if I've gone through it 6 times, I've got 6 avatars that are all like, oh, I was you 65 million years ago. I was you 700,000 years ago. I was you when...
So this is like that one episode of DS9 where they split all of Dax's personalities out and she has to go around and talk to them and they're all like, I was only ever a piano player and I play piano and I like to talk about pianos.
Yes.
It's like, wow, how did you have such shit personalities before this? Dax, what the hell's going on?
Well, it's because they were all from that planet of the Daxes.
Oh, yeah, the Trill planet, whatever that's called.
Yeah, that's right.
Trillvia.
Yeah, Trilby.
Trilby. It's called Trilby.
They're from Fedorion Prime.
In the Milady Galaxy.
Okay, and the last thing I think I want to talk about here. We mentioned it briefly, your Himsati form.
Yes.
So your Himsati form is your animal form, your primal form, your what you were millions of years ago.
Only one of all of the various groups of immortals you can be, which are called prides and which we will discuss in the next game, has humans for their Himsati. So most people are like, oh, I am an ascended immortal zebra.
Yeah, I was an iguana or I was a spider.
I was a rock. That's the whole pride of Charlie Brown's.
Yeah, Charlie Brown's. I was a rock. Yeah, well, I've got one where I'm playing as a guy who is an ascended pumpkin.
The golden pumpkin!
And when you get your Himsati form, the big advantage of doing this is it turns all of your motes in every Halo into Free Immaculum.
Ooh, so many motes. So you have a whole, you have basically minimum of 15 points to put wherever you want. So if you want to tear a guy's head off, you can put all 15 of your motes into orange and just hit him so hard.
Except you won't, because now you have zero motes in yellow, so you miss him.
Yeah, well, okay, fine. So you can put a bunch of motes into something that's great.
Which, yellow is a lot like dexterity in any White Wolf game, yeah, because it carries over successes. Mm-hmm. Like, if I hit someone real good, then that carries over to failures. My damage.
Yeah, you can make up for failures in all the places where you only have one in your Himsadi, or sorry, your Halos.
Yeah, but the Himsadi lets you do that so that every escapade, you can change your Immaculum around, and an escapade is 10 clashes.
Right. Although it's notable that this isn't a great idea. Like, you don't always want to be like, all right, are we fighting someone? Werewolf time! You don't want to power up like it's Altered Beast, because once you get turned into an immortal, or your Himsadi form doesn't want to let you be a human again.
No, there are tiers of Himsadi for how powerful it is and how much it wants to take control, mm-hmm, and you have to resist that. Also, if you turn into a Himsadi, then the Sanguinary will reach out to you through the Morpheum from the Crucible using conundrums, and then, my friend, you might become a redneck.
Well, you have to be careful, because you might be a redneck. I was already ready for the Femdarkle joke. And
no, if the Sanguinary reaches through a conundrum into your Morpheum, you might be a redneck.
If the Sunedrion causes your babbler to Himsadi more than three times,
you might be a redneck.
Here's your sign.
The sign is Femdarkle.
Femdarkle. Okay, folks, if you're really intrigued by all the goofball story stuff that we're talking about that we didn't even get to during this episode, don't you fret, because we're doing a whole second episode on Immortal the Invisible War in 2 weeks.
Do you want to know what the Shouting War was?
Yeah.
Do you need to know what conundrums are?
We didn't even mention the prides or the callings of this game, which are basically the race and class.
Yeah, and the reason we didn't mention them is because we were only going over things that have to do with the rules, and those don't matter.
Well, they matter only for the purposes of choosing cheap serenades.
They matter in as much as the suggestions matter from an audience during an improv.
Yeah, I heard Abraham Lincoln in a movie theater. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure someone said that.
All right, I need a place where you can be the toilet. Oh, I heard movie theater. Yeah.
We should do some improv classes sometime. That'd be fun for us.
Just troll improv classes.
Troll improv. Don't you feel like enough people probably go to improv classes to troll them?
No. I feel everyone goes to improv classes because they're like, you know what I need is a place to express myself.
I feel like it's, I need to get to Hollywood.
Is why everyone is taking it serious.
Nice. All right, well, so like I said, we're going to be doing, in 2 weeks, we'll cover the whole story of this insane game. You may ask why we didn't do it now, because we were able to talk without breathing for an hour about the rules of this game, no problem. We can do the exact same thing for the story. So, as always, don't forget to check out the Patreon bonus content. In fact, let me tell you right now, if you've never been a Patreon subscriber, this is the week to do it. Because this game's character creation, while relatively simple overall, includes a 35-question survey that you need to take to determine what your character should be like.
It is the and it's not like, how strong are you? Do you like to protect things?
Oh no, the first question on it is, describe the perfect room.
Great. This will certainly tell me what my character's stats are.
Describe the creation of the universe in detail. So if you want to hear our characters go through a ridiculous list of nonsense when we're assembling them, so much so that in order to work with this whole two-episode split, we're just going to do John's character this week.
Yeah.
And next week we'll just do mine.
We are just going to interview each other, because basically making a character in this game is a job interview.
That is correct. So this is the right time to support us on Patreon. As always, any amount you kick into the Patreon is enough to get you the bonus content. Yeah. We don't care.
There's any amount is enough as long as it's $15.
That's correct. Any amount starting from the world global currency minimum floor of $15 a month. Oh, Christ. All right. If you're not interested in the money thing, don't feel bad. We don't care. Instead...
Yeah, we're poor. We understand.
We understand that. We live poorly. Also, we don't have any money. Anyway,
this Christmas, I'm giving Jeff, as his present, nothing.
That's normal. You give me nothing when you have a job.
No, I mean, I'm taking things away from you. Okay. I'm making it so you have nothing.
You're going to give me the nothing from the Neverending Story.
That's what I'm doing. I'm going to show you how much sadder it is when the nothing takes away the Rockbiter's friends.
I'm sorry, I believe the saddest thing is when he drowns Artax the horse.
Yeah, when the rock biter drowns Artax, the
that
horse.
That would be really sad.
He's just like, get down there. Look at these big, strong hands holding the horse down.
Perfectly fine for drowning a horse. Can't save a family worth shit. All right, so as always, if you have a question or you want to make a recommendation, you can contact us at systemmastery@gmail.com. Find us on our Facebook page, which is System Mastery. Find us on Twitter at System Mastery, or just go to systemmasterypodcast.com. Leave a comment in the questions and or your questions or whatever you got below the episodes. We're fine with that. And check out our afterthought. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about for this afterthought because it'll be a midpoint between two episodes, but we'll find something, by God.
Oh, I always come up with something good.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, then, yeah.
Then also, during our various weeks, we do our movie mastery. So check out our dumb movie reviews. We will review literally anything you recommend to us. We put it on a list, we roll it.
And this month, we are doing holiday-themed movies. But because there's a war on Christmas, it's Christmas-themed movies.
It's holiday. Eight Crazy Nights is already on the list.
And we're not going to do it because I hate the Jews.
I think you just hated Adam Sandler. Am I going to rope all the Jews into this?
He's representative.
So, thank you very... No, he's not. Oh, my God. Thank you very much for listening. As always, we'll see you in 2 weeks with a thrilling conclusion. And have a wonderful week.